Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, July 15th, 2021. As a group of Texas Democratic lawmakers flee to D.C. to protest Republican efforts to overhaul voting rights, Representative Morales stays behind. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Austin. A majority of Democrats from the Texas House of Representatives left the state on Monday in an attempt to block two voting restriction bills being pushed by Republicans through the special legislative session that began last Thursday. By not appearing at the legislative chambers in Austin, the dozens of Democrats left the House without a quorum, preventing the legislature from voting on Governor Greg Abbott's priority bills and effectively bringing the special session to a grinding halt. However, not every Democratic lawmaker left the state. Representative Eddie Morales, whose district covers the Tri-County and much of far west Texas, decided to stay behind in Texas. I believe that staying to both debate and articulate my reasons for opposing the bill is the best way for me to represent my particular district, Morales said in a statement. That said, I support the decisions of my colleagues who choose to fight this bill differently, using parliamentary procedures. The bills of issue, House Bill 3 and Senate Bill 1, would further restrict the ability for Texans to vote by limiting voting hours, banning drive-through polls, and prohibiting election officials from sending out unsolicited applications for mail-in ballots if passed into law. Rather than appearing at the legislative chambers on Monday, the group of fleeing Democrats boarded two planes to Washington, D.C., where they plan to pressure President Joe Biden and congressional lawmakers to pass federal legislation strengthening voting rights. We are now taking the fight to our nation's capital. We are living on borrowed time in Texas. We need Congress to act now to pass the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to protect Texans and all Americans from the Trump Republicans' nationwide war on democracy, a group of Democrats said in a joint statement. In an interview, Representative Morales said that the GOP is trying to undermine the recent strategies developed by Harris County, the most populous county in the state, that made voting more accessible. They're specifically targeting everything Harris County did that was successful during the pandemic, he said. If people loved it so much, and if it's really truly an election bill of bringing more access to the citizens, why are we not making it even more easy, setting up drive-through voting, 24/7 voting, and drop boxes? This is not the first time the Democrats have broken quorum to try and quash the GOP's voting restriction bills. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, the 87th regular legislative session came to an end on May 30th, after many of the state's Democrats left the legislative chambers in a bid to kill Senate Bill 7, which mirrored the voting restriction bills currently being pushed by the state's Republican lawmakers. At the time, Morales broke away from his Democratic peers and decided to not take part in the walkout. He did so to defend my district and defend my right to vote no on it and state my opinion. It doesn't mean we supported it, the bill, but we all stayed back to fight it and to say what needed to be said about that bill, Morales said. At the House chamber on Tuesday, Even though the House did not have two-thirds of its members present to conduct business, the lawmakers were able to pass a measure to have law enforcement track down absentee lawmakers in an effort to regain a quorum. That said, the vote is more of a theatrical matter, as statewide law enforcement officers do not have the authority to detain people outside of Texas. Morales was one of just four representatives, all Democrats in border districts, who voted against the measure to send for absentee lawmakers. We're not just staying back and doing nothing. The plan is to strongly oppose it, the election bill. Make sure no shenanigans take place tomorrow, Morales said in an interview before the House met on Tuesday, and to be ready for whatever attack may come. Some Democratic state senators also made the trip to Washington, including Senator Cesar Blanco and Senator Roland Gutierrez. Our democracy is stronger when more Texans participate in our elections, Blanco, whose district covers Jeff Davis and Presidio counties, said in a statement. But the Republican sham election bill will erect more barriers for minorities, youth, disabled, and elderly Texans to participate in our elections. This is a direct assault on our democracy, all done to perpetuate the big lie. Basta! Despite Blanco's and Gutierrez's best efforts, the Senate was able to reach a quorum on Tuesday, where they passed Senate Bill 1. That said, the bill will be handed over to the House, where it will stall out until a quorum is regained. In response to the legislative exodus, Abbott said, Texas Democrats' decision to break a quorum of the Texas legislature and abandon the Texas state capitol inflicts harm on the very Texans who elected them to serve. As they fly across the country on private planes, they leave undone issues that can help their districts and our state. On the House floor on Tuesday, U.S. Senator John Cornyn remarked on the Democrats' decision to break quorum. He said, all eyes are now on Washington, D.C.'s newest asylum seekers, the members of the Texas House of Representatives. Rather than do their jobs in Texas, yesterday House Democrats abandoned both our state and the millions of Texans that they represent. They got on two chartered jets, maskless, with at least one case of light beer, and hopped on the jets to come to Washington, D.C. The Democrats in Washington would need to stay out of Texas for the rest of the special session, which comes to an end on August 6th, in order to stifle these new bills. That said, Abbott still has the authority to call another special session in the future. Yet, Vice President Kamala Harris met with the Democrats on Tuesday, a sign that the federal government is, at the very least, listening to the lawmakers' plea for help. Additional reporting by Abby Perot. County attorney talks financial repercussions of guilty verdict in Sanchez trial. By Abby Perot. ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. The Presidio County Commissioner's Court met Wednesday morning for the first time since a jury's verdict found Presidio County and its treasurer, Francis Garcia, had violated former county employee Katie Sanchez's First Amendment rights. In 2018, the county voted to eliminate the county office Sanchez worked in after she unsuccessfully challenged Garcia for treasurer in 2018. Providing an update following the case, County Attorney Rod Ponton explained the potential costs the county might face. The verdict would give $500,000 for past wages and other damages to Katie Sanchez, and another $500,000 for future lost wages and damages to Sanchez. It also includes a $1 million assessment against Treasurer Garcia as punitive damages. All of that adds up to $2 million, which is covered by the $2 million insurance policy the county holds. But the Texas Association of Counties, who represented the county and continues to represent them in the appeals process, informed Pontone that more fees could push the county beyond its insurance policy limits. If Sanchez seeks compensation for her attorney's fees and the county is ordered to pay them, prices may end up in the ballpark of another $500,000, Pontone told commissioners. And since it would exceed the $2 million limit, the cost could land in the laps of the county taxpayers. The attorney said the county's insurance premiums are certainly going to go up, a guaranteed blow to taxpayers who foot the insurance costs every year. We don't know exactly what the financial liability could be to the county, but it likely could impact the county, including the county having to pay out of tax money. We'll just have to wait and see, Pontone said. County Judge Cinderella Guevara alleged that the TAC attorneys had not adequately informed the commissioners in executive session about the potential for attorney fees being charged to the county, nor that the verdict could ultimately exceed the county's insurance policy limits. When we had the option to settle out of court, we were never advised of that, she said. Pontone concurred, adding that the county was not advised by TAC that the verdict's dollar amount could soar that high. Addressing the treasurer, Pontone warned of potential repercussions, saying, Ms. Garcia needs to be aware of the fact that it's up in the air whether or not the TAC policy covers the punitive part. She may have to pay that part out of her pocket. If the county ends up having to pay out of its pocket, the county will also have a claim against Ms. Garcia. Pontone called the verdict a big black eye to Presidio County, saying, I'm really disappointed in the actions of Ms. Garcia that were proven in the federal court in Pecos. More pointedly, he recalled an incident 4 years ago when then-Commissioner Lorenzo Hernandez resigned after receiving a bribery charge for accepting a financial bribe in exchange for voting to approve a contract in commissioner's court. I think Ms. Garcia should think about doing the same thing because of the terrible situation she's put Presidio County in, the attorney said. Regardless, we're going to have to wait for the verdict to turn into a judgment and the appeals process to go out. It has certainly put Presidio County in a bad light at this point. In other county business, commissioners approved an update to the lighting ordinance, joining every city in the Tri-County in adding new provisioning that will help the area become the largest dark sky preserve under the International Dark Sky Association. The city of Marfa passed a similar ordinance update just one night earlier, becoming the final city in the Tri-County to join the effort. Bill Wren from the McDonald Observatory told commissioners that a stronger dark skies ordinance is cost-efficient, good for recreational and scientific night sky viewing, protective of migratory bird populations, and did not statistically impact nighttime crime. I think of our dark skies as something that we take for granted, but we're very fortunate to live in an area where we can actually look and enjoy dark skies and actually see the stars, Guevara said. Commissioner Knight added, we need to preserve what we have as much as we can. Guevara, Knight, and Cabezuela voted unanimously to pass the ordinance update, with Commissioners Eloy Aranda and Brenda Bentley absent. As the fall season nears, so does the end of the county's fiscal year. In preparation, the judge has called budget workshops that will take place Monday and Tuesday, where departments will share their wants and needs before commissioners pass a budget that will determine how taxpayer dollars are spent in 2021 to 2022. Democratic Attorney General candidate hits 8 campaign stops out west. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBenSentinel.com. West Texas. Spring primaries and November 2022 general elections are still off in the distance, but in West Texas, one candidate is already hitting the campaign trail. Last week, Joe Jaworski visited 8 local cities on his West Texas swing, hoping to shore up support for his bid to become the next Attorney General of Texas. Jaworski's 2-day tour met constituents at campaign stops in Pecos, Fort Stockton, Alpine, Marfa, Van Horn, Presidio, Terlingua, and Marathon, answering attendees' questions and sharing ideas from his platform. The former Galveston City Council member, former mayor, and longtime trial lawyer said that if he is elected into state office, he would stop the current AG's practice of filing frivolous lawsuits, become a figurehead for the legalization of recreational cannabis, and offer his office's support to local governments. Your local government cares about you, your mayors, your county judges, your school superintendents, and right now the GOP leadership is in an ideological battle with local control, Jaworski told residents during his campaign stop in Marfa. Local control is something that Republicans used to promote as part of their ideology, and they have long abandoned it. In the Tri-County area, counties and cities had power wrested from their hands just last year when the governor created coronavirus-related ordinances that superseded local ones. The current administration has also limited local ordinances elsewhere. If you want to have a plastic bag ban in Corpus Christi, or if you want to limit aggregate mining in Kerr County because you're worried about the purity of the Guadalupe River, or if you want to do any other innovation on voting like Harris County did, and it's not black letter law legal, have at it. I'll have your back because I'm a former mayor and I understand the incubator innovation that local government brings. Staff photo by Abby Perot. Democrat Joe Jaworski told West Texans about his candidacy for Attorney General at El Cosmico on Friday night, sharing his plans to end frivolous litigation in the office, support the effort to legalize recreational cannabis in Texas, and turn the current AG's voter fraud division to a civil rights division. Alpine residents Doug Gray and Asia Cornelius came out to the event at El Cosmico on Friday, knowing little about Jaworski, but hoping to learn more about the candidate. For Cornelius, 2 things from his speech resonated. Jaworski addressed the new legislation that would allow anyone in Texas to sue any person who accesses an abortion or helps in the provision of one, speaking vehemently against it. The 2 Alpine residents especially liked one proposal from Jaworski's platform: to convert Paxton's voter fraud division into a civil rights division. How in God's name does an AG's office anywhere not have a civil rights division? Jaworski exclaimed in a passionate moment before a small crowd of about a dozen. As a black woman, I'm a minority in 2 ways, those are issues that I think about a lot. It was nice that he talked about that, Cornelius said, with Gray adding, representation matters, so if it makes people feel more comfortable, it's important. If elected, Jaworski said another major goal is to end the numerous lawsuits the state has brought against the federal government. He was very outspoken about his distaste for current AG Ken Paxton during his visit to Marfa. Paxton has often used his time in office to challenge the federal government, bringing lawsuits over presidential election results in Georgia and Wisconsin, various immigration issues, and trying to stop the expansion of Medicaid in Texas. It is a culture war posing as a government, what we have right now. It's wrong. It's not the way it's supposed to be, Jaworski said. He also threw jabs at the embattled incumbent, who is facing a securities fraud indictment from 2015 and an FBI investigation for potentially abusing his power in office to help a wealthy donor. Paxton has denied guilt on both. Still, Jaworski believes his advantage, even as a Democrat in a red state, is the coming battle within the Republican AG primary. The incumbent faces two challengers, George P. Bush and Eva Guzman. When they spend lots of money cutting each other up as to how bad the other is, and how they are the only one worthy of Trump's endorsement, let reasonable Republicans, independents, and libertarians, and all Democrats take notice and say, that's just not going to work anymore, he said. While Jaworski was still unchallenged during his West Texas swing tour, by Tuesday he found his first primary opponent. Civil rights attorney Lee Merritt announced he would run on the Democratic ticket, becoming the first challenger to Jaworski's primary campaign. Jaworski faces an uphill battle in the state where recent elections have yielded very few victories for the Democrats, but he isn't deterred. He asserted, I think if the Democrats have a positive, productive policy, this will be our year. Blue Origin will attempt first manned spaceflight from Culberson County on Tuesday. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Culberson County. Blue Origin plans to send its first four humans from a launch pad near Van Horn, just beyond Earth's atmosphere, and into space on Tuesday. Four intrepid travelers are set to reach the edge of space before returning to a patch of Earth outside of Van Horn mere minutes later, with Blue Origin founder and billionaire Amazon magnate Jeff Bezos on board. Joining Bezos are his brother Mark Bezos, lifelong aspiring astronaut Mary Wallace Wally Funk, and a fourth unannounced person who bid $28 million to ride along. The small group of astronauts will each take a seat aboard New Shepard, a craft that is completely manned by onboard computers. Photo courtesy of Blue Origin. Wally Funk will join Jeff Bezos on Blue Origin's New Shepard's first human flight later this month. Those wanting to witness the historic event may have to tune in to an online stream of the launch at www.blueorigin.com, since there are no on-site viewing locations at the Corn Ranch, just north of Van Horn, where Blue Origin will hold its 16th launch of the reusable New Shepard craft. At the request of Blue Origin, the Texas Department of Transportation plans to close down sections of Highway 54 on launch day, where enthusiastic viewers have often gathered to watch test flights in the past. According to a TxDOT spokesperson, once permits are finalized for the closure, quote, the public should expect a closure from 7 to 11 a.m. CST, from I-10 to 62-180, with only local traffic being permitted approximately 21 miles north of Van Horn and approximately 34 miles south of Highway 62-180. While many have inquired about roadside viewing, the spokesperson wrote, TxDOT reminds the public of the inherent dangers of parking alongside a highway and exiting one's vehicle. Blue Origin will begin a launch broadcast at 6:30 a.m. with liftoff planned for 8 a.m. Presidio Sheriff met with Abbott to discuss border crisis. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBenSentinel.com. Austin. Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez traveled to Austin over the weekend alongside 11 other border sheriffs for another border security briefing held by Texas Governor Greg Abbott at the state capitol. At the meeting, Abbott discussed the influx of undocumented immigrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Each of these counties are dealing with a record number of people who are coming across the border. They are the tip of the spear. They are the ones who are having to deal with immediate consequences unlike anything they've ever seen, Abbott said in a video his office put out. Abbott was joined by Texas Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw, Texas Division of Emergency Management Chief Nim Kidd, and Adjutant General of Texas Tracy Norris. However, the press release related to the roundtable made no mention of personnel from Customs and Border Protection attending the meeting. Last Wednesday, the governor listed border security funding as a priority on the special legislative session that began the following day. I called for legislation this special session to provide more border security funding for law enforcement and counties. This funding will help us better step up to meet this challenge and gives our border communities the resources and support they need, Abbott said. As the Big Bend Sentinel reported this week, the 87th special legislative session came to an abrupt halt after a majority of Texas Democratic lawmakers fled the state, leaving the House without a quorum and preventing the legislature from voting on Abbott's priority items. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson did not attend the meeting in Austin due to a scheduling conflict. I don't know what they talked about, but I haven't seen any action, Dodson said in regards to the state's intervention in border security affairs. Jeff Davis County Sheriff William Bill Kitts also did not make it out to Austin. Kitts could not be reached for a comment. This is the second border security meeting Abbott has hosted for local officials in Texas. On June 9th, County Judge Cinderella Guevara traveled to Del Rio to take part in the Border Security Summit, where Abbott discussed the steps his office is taking to secure our southern border and combat the ongoing humanitarian crisis. Sheriff Dominguez also attended this meeting in June. At the local level, they need more manpower in dealing with gangs that operate on both sides of the border, the governor said at the briefing over the weekend. Bottom line is, because of the current administration's complete abandonment, they have left it to the state of Texas, as well as to the counties that are represented here today, to have to pick up the load of responding to the unprecedented number of people coming into our country. Dominguez did not respond to a request for comment. Oscar Carrillo, the sheriff out of Culberson, was also in attendance at the round table. Carrillo likewise did not respond to a request for comment. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Chuck Salgado, left, and Salvador Roman, center, from the city's public utilities department, prepared a pipe and installed a valve below the water tower on Washington Street on Monday, during a citywide water outage. Accidental waterline disconnect causes brief water outage Monday. Marfa. The water was out in Marfa on Monday, causing some local businesses to close for a few hours as emergency repairs took place. The Public Works Department had planned for the city to have low water pressure on Monday, having drained the city's elevated cone top water tank Sunday night in preparation for contractors to repair a broken pipe. At the last minute on Monday, the contractors were unable to come out to complete the work due to unforeseen circumstances. That same morning, conditions from the tank being drained caused a pipe to shift, disconnecting a line from a valve. City employees made repairs and restored water pressure within 3 hours, even as a rainstorm set in. The contractor work has been rescheduled for Monday morning, and while lower water pressure is expected for some Marfa residents through this week and into the next, Public Utilities Supervisor Chuck Salgado said it should be hardly noticeable for the majority of town if repairs go as planned.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, July 8th. FSISD Pumps Brakes on Fuel Station by Nathan Hewer. One of the Fort Stockton School Board's biggest potential projects in 2021 reversed courses at the group's regular meeting on June 28th upon the recommendation of Superintendent Dr. Gabriel Zamora. The Fort Stockton ISD School Board unanimously approved a proposal from JF Petroleum to build a transportation fuel station that was not to exceed a cost of $1,050,000 at the school board meeting on May 24th. The meeting was Ralph Tranum's last as superintendent before Zamora took over those duties in June. Zamora soon realized after taking the job that a bid package for the project had yet to be voted on, which was soon followed by an inquiry on a return on investment and determination of whether it was a need for the district because of the high price tag of the fuel station. What I asked is, what is the return on investment on this project? Prior to my arrival, it was my assumption it was already done and over with, Zamora said. Instead of what I found is the bid has been approved on their end, and we now have a proposal and I have the contract. The new superintendent spoke to Southwest Marketers, Inc., President Bentley King, to help ballpark an idea of savings the new fuel station would bring to the district. Zamora emphasized at the school board meeting on June 28th that the project would not be worth doing if the school district could not break even from the project within 5 to 8 years. Preliminary in this conversation with Mr. King believes we'll save somewhere in the neighborhood of 15% to 20% per gallon of fuel. So it's something we can look at as substantial, but so is the initial investment when it comes to spending nearly $1 million on a project such as this, he said. After 10 years, we still wouldn't have recovered the money invested in this project. Once we go beyond that, I'll put it to you this way. If it takes 2 decades, there's a very good chance we're driving electric buses at that time. That's where the technology is headed. School Board President Billy Espino and Zamora spoke with the Transportation Director of the district before last week's meeting and received a report that operations were running smoothly after recent repairs. When asked, he told us we were doing great after he had the pumps repaired and after he had the filters changed and the proper ventilation so they could pump faster, Zamora said. Other issues that were addressed involving the project was the current lighting at the existing fuel station and the possibility of the fuel pumps going out. Zamora stated that additional lighting could add an inexpensive rate, and if a fuel pump goes out, the cost would be around $6,000. In the event that the pumps go out, I estimate it'll be in the $5,000 to $6,000 range to replace. We already have a system in place, Zamora said. The school board decided to table the matter until their next meeting on July 26th, after a brief discussion by the school board. The bottom line, I believe that we're in a position to look at what our needs are and what our wants are and then rank them, Zamora explained. During this period of time, even if we have to call another board meeting to look at what the needs and wants are and organize them, so that we can put the money where we are going to get the most bang for our buck, is a course of action I recommend. Business Spotlight. Achieving a Dream. Olvera Opens Eternity Funeral Home by Nathan Hewer. Working hard and giving to others were principles of life that Nancy Olvera learned at a young age. Olvera's father, who was pastor, taught her those principles during her childhood in Presidio, and Olvera carried out those values throughout her life. Those values intersected with hopes of one day owning a funeral home and helping those in need when a loved one passes. It was my childhood dream to be a funeral director and own a funeral home, but I knew Presidio was too small to make a living out of it there, she said. I wanted to serve, and it's a way of serving families because they're lost. They need guidance. You're there to serve. Olvera initially helped others in another way to start her career, working for the state of Texas as caseworker for those in need of food stamps and Medicaid. The Presidio native decided after 15 years of working for the state and being an at-home mom that she wanted to go back to school and pursue her desired career. I went to school in San Antonio College, mortuary department. So it was a transition to follow my dream in my late 30s, she said. I decided to go to school, get a 2-year degree in applied science. Olvera got a job working for Legacy Funeral Group while attaining her associate degree and stayed with the company for the next 8 years. A few years ago, Olvera received a sign that was time for her to start her own funeral home and followed through with her conviction despite some uncertainty. In July, one Sunday, there was a family reaching out to me. That's when it all happened to me. God just placed that in my heart, she said. I wasn't ready for the transition, but it just happened. It was birthed in my heart, and I followed my instinct to buy it here in Fort Stockton. The city of Fort Stockton is new territory for Olvera, but the small town feel brings an added comfort to her transition, that along with being able to service her hometown of Presidio, something the previous funeral director at that location did before her. The previous owner of this funeral home used to serve in Presidio, and he was embraced. It was good I was able to come closer to my hometown and service them. I like small towns, but I come from a smaller town. They got McDonald's and Walmart here. What more can I ask for? Olvera said with a smile. Olvera held a ribbon-cutting ceremony at her Eternity Funeral Home in Fort Stockton on July 1st, located at 600 East Dickinson Boulevard. The ceremony represented a dream come true and the ability to fully embody what her dad had taught her from a young age. Coming from a border town, my dad was a pastor. You're used to serving and giving. You're not here to receive. Your perspective is to help others, and that's how our dad raised us, working hard and giving to others, she said. Sandlot baseball returns. Baseball games and water usually mean rainouts, but not this time. On Saturday, July 17th, teams from Fort Stockton and Marfa will play a Sandlot baseball game to celebrate the Comanche Springs water restoration effort underway in Fort Stockton. The 2 p.m. game at Blue Sox Field in Rooney Park pits the Spring City Boys against Los Yonki Gallos de Marfa, and admission is free. Organizers will have free refreshments on hand, courtesy of Rambler Sparkling Water and the Brick Vault Brewery in Marathon. It's part of a full weekend of events, including the Water Carnival, July 15th through the 17th at the Comanche Springs Swimming Pool. The game is being organized by the nonprofit group, Texas Water Trade, which is spearheading the Comanche Springs restoration in collaboration with the city of Fort Stockton. We're so excited about bringing more people to Fort Stockton to see all that it has to offer, including the historic bathhouse, said Texas Water Trade CEO Charlene Lurig. What better way to do that than at the same water carnival that drew people to Comanche Springs' cool, clear waters for generations? Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander added his thoughts on the event, saying, "This is a great project, and the Sandlot game is a wonderful way to celebrate it and get folks excited. From swimming to tourism to agriculture, restoring Comanche Springs flows would be an enormous shot in the arm for Fort Stockton in Pecos County. The story of Comanche Springs is known to every student of Texas water law. Once a 30-million-gallon-a-day oasis on the edge of the Chihuahuan Desert, Comanche Springs supported dozens of local farms and a vibrant tourism industry built around what was then a spring-fed swimming pool. But the perennial flows ended in the 1950s due to significant groundwater pumping upstream from the spring, meaning less water for swimming, tourism, and downstream farms. Over the past decade, the once quiet springs have begun flowing again in the winter months when the aquifer rebounds from summer irrigation pumping. Texas Water Trade and the Meadows Center for Water and the Environment recently completed a 2-year study on the feasibility of restoring Comanche Springs to perennial flows using voluntary markets. Texas Water Trade is now engaging with landowners and irrigators upstream to see if they can be incentivized to temporarily suspend or reduce groundwater pumping to help restore year-round spring flows. Texas Water Trade has significant funds available to incentivize such activities, whether through rotational fallowing, switching to less water-intensive crops, or developing replacement wells in an entirely different aquifer. We have a phenomenal opportunity, and we've been floored by the response from Fort Stockton and Pecos County in support of this vision, said Lurig, speaking to the Fort Stockton Rotary Club in May.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, July 8th. Fireworks-related calls down. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Things were relatively quiet over the July 4th holiday, with very few fire-related calls. Fire Chief Randy Crabtree of the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department said there were no fire calls at all as the result of fireworks. Quote, "We assisted Wicket VFD on a tank battery fire on Friday, July 2nd, and we were posted for safety purposes at the fireworks display. There were no other fireworks-related calls," Crabtree said. Chief Deputy Michael Franco with the Ward County Sheriff's Office said there were no shooting or fireworks-related calls, as shooting fireworks is legal by permission in areas outside of the city limits. A small fire was reported in Thorntonville near 3rd and Colorado. Quote, "The recent rains likely helped keep calls down," end quote. Lieutenant Stormy Laws with the Monahans Police Department said, quote, "We only had 20 calls all night, 7 of which were gunshot fireworks related. One citation was issued. With the rain, we expected more people would be out shooting fireworks, but that was not the case. This year was much lower than we have seen in the past," end quote. Call from pizza delivery driver led to Cantu's arrest last week. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. On June 28th, around 2:52 p.m., a local pizza delivery driver received a message from a woman inside the residence at 1504 South Gale asking for help. Sergeant Kevin Macias and Officer Beatrice Diaz were dispatched to the scene after the pizza delivery driver made a 911 call requesting a welfare check at the home. Quote, "When officers arrived at the house, the victim, identified as Veronica Garcia, age 32, told officers her longtime boyfriend, identified as Daniel Cantu, age 35, refused to let her leave the home for days at a time," Monahans Police Department Lieutenant Stormy Laws said. Garcia also told officers Cantu had been, quote, "assaulting her by slapping her and pulling her hair," Laws said. Cantu fled the scene on foot prior to the officer's arrival. Following a description of Cantu and his clothing from Garcia, officers attempted to locate Cantu, but those efforts proved unsuccessful. Quote, "The next day, officers returned to the home for a follow-up, and it was clear to the officers Garcia was trying to keep them outside and was hesitant about letting them in the home, he said. Garcia eventually let officers inside, and they were able to locate Cantu hiding in the far-end bedroom located to the left of the home. Cantu was subsequently arrested and taken to the Ward County Jail on charges of continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony. He also had a parole violation warrant issued based on a previous assault family violence charge. Bond was set at $12,000 for the continuous violence against the family charge, and there is no bond on the parole violation warrant. Cantu remains in custody. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000. Public meeting set to widen Highway 18. The Texas Department of Transportation has scheduled a virtual public meeting to propose widening State Highway 18 from Loop 464 to Fort Stockton. The virtual meeting is scheduled for 5 p.m. Wednesday, July 28th. TxDOT is proposing to widen State Highway 18 from Loop 464 on the south side of Monahans to Business Interstate 10 in Fort Stockton, a distance of about 48 miles. The proposed improvements to State Highway 18 would include widening to a four-lane divided highway with two lanes in each direction and a center median consisting of an open ditch or turn lane. To attend the meeting virtually, go to www.texdot.com on the above listed date and in the keyword search enter SH18 South Project. After the meeting, written comments from the public regarding the proposed project are requested and may be submitted by mail to BGE Incorporated, attention SH18 South, 2595 Dallas Parkway, Suite 101, Frisco, Texas, 75034, or via email to sh18south@projectinformation.com. For further information, see the notice on page 6A of today's edition of the Monahans News. Swanson sends two to prison on felony offenses. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson handed down two felony prison sentences on June 29th on charges of prohibited substance in a correctional facility, possession of heroin, and burglary of a building. Rain Allen Hurd, age 23, of Monahans, waived his right to a jury trial and accepted a plea agreement to a charge of burglary of a building, a state jail felony, and possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, greater than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, a second-degree felony. Hurd was arrested for the burglary charge on March 13, 2016, and was placed on community supervision, but failed to meet the terms of that agreement when he was arrested on October 24, 2020, with heroin. According to the indictment for the 2016 charge, Hurd entered a building owned by Nelda Patterson Helmers and took soft drinks, cookies, and sausages which belonged to Helmers without her consent. The 2020 indictment states Hurd was found to be in possession of heroin in the amount of 4 grams or more, but less than 200 grams. Hurd was given 5 years for the burglary charge and 21 months for the possession charge. Both sentences will run concurrently, and he will be in confinement in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice and assist a $1,500 fine, $613 in court costs, and ordered to pay $180 in restitution. Hurd was given credit for 485 days time served. Future Lavario, age 34, pled guilty to a charge of prohibited substance, item in correctional civil community facility, a third-degree felony. Lavario's charge was enhanced to a second-degree felony, and he was punished as a repeat offender. He was arrested on the charge on March 23, 2021, and was indicted for the offense by a 143rd District Grand Jury on April 21, 2021. He was sentenced to 2 years confinement in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. The indictment states, after being arrested for unauthorized use of a vehicle, a state jail felony, Lavario did intentionally bring methamphetamine into the Ward County Jail. It also reads Lavario was previously convicted on September 13, 2017, of retaliation in Midland County. Lavario was ordered to pay a fine of $355 in court costs, $180 in restitution, and was given credit for 98 days. Attorney for the state on all cases was 143rd District Attorney Randall W. Reynolds. Drilling activity still increasing. Crude oil, gasoline prices up. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The Permian Basin continues to see moderate increases in drilling activity, a slow but steady growth. Since October 2020, the number of operational rigs has increased every month from 122 to 237. In November 2018, activity peaked at 493, steadily declining to the August 2020 low, according to reports from Baker Hughes Corporation. The Permian Basin is operating just under 50% of the national activity, with 237 of the 475 total rigs in operation nationally. The bulk of the area activity is along State Highway 285 corridor through Reeves and Loving counties in Texas and Eddy County in New Mexico. Those three counties account for 30% of the Permian Basin activity, with 71 rigs in operation. Eastern New Mexico leads the activity with 27 rigs in Eddy County and 47 in Lee County. Eddy County decreased from 37 to 27, and Lee County has increased from 34 to 47 since May 28th, the largest gain of any county in the Permian Basin. Chavez County is reporting one active rig. On the Texas side of the basin, Midland County is showing the largest gain in active rigs, with an increase from 31 to 37 over the past 5 weeks. Reeves County follows, increasing from 24 to 28. Activity is mixed over the other counties in the basin. Ward County has dropped from 5 to 4. Ector County dropped from 2 to 1, while Andrews County is unchanged at 3, and Crane County has increased from 2 to 3. Winkler and Pecos counties are both up from 1 to 2. Prices for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude are also increasing. On Monday, the price was $76.36, up from $66.91 at the end of May, nearing the highest reported price in over 3 years. Analysts with oilprice.com can't completely agree on the future price of oil. Irina Slav said in an article on June 21st that prices could fluctuate wildly, quote, from $35 per barrel to $130 per barrel. This is the range for oil prices in the next few years that we could see, according to a commodity trading group. And it will all depend on what peaks first, demand or investment in new production. Quote, you could see spikes to even higher than $100 a barrel, even $130, and you could also see it go down to $35 a barrel for periods of time going forward. End quote. William Reed II, chief executive of Castleton Commodities International, said at the FT Global Commodities Summit this week, as quoted by Reuters. Analyst Osama Rizvi said on Monday that prices are not likely to go over $100 per barrel. Quote, Bullish sentiment is now driving speculation of $100 oil in 2021 as collective confidence of a rebound and global economic activity gains momentum. However, there are plenty of bearish factors that remain in oil markets that analysts would do well not to overlook. Quote, Chinese refiners have already started to tap into their reserves, threatening to hurt demand from the world's largest oil importer. Geopolitically, the possibility of sanctions on Iran's oil industry being lifted could lead to a new flood of supply, while tensions between China and the U.S. could reignite a trade war between the two. Finally, as oil prices rise, we may see U.S. shale production inch up, adding to global supply. While there is plenty to be bullish about in oil markets, calls for $100 oil are premature, to say the least. End quote. Gasoline prices for a gallon of regular unleaded fuel has followed suit with prices locally, state, and nationally, mostly reporting increases since May 28th. According to AAA.com, the national average on Monday was $3.13, up from $3.04. Average price in Texas was up from $2.71 to $2.80. Ector County is up to $3.04 from $2.96 at the end of May. Pecos County was up from $2.98 to $3.08. Reeves County has increased from $3.08 to $3.13. Ward County has increased from an average of $3 to $3.01. Winkler County increased by 5 cents to $2.84, while Crane County actually dropped slightly from $2.89 to $2.84.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.